Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Peter Werwein, and I am managing editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. And today, it's a real treat, kind of a thrill, to be speaking to Dr. Mandy Cohen. Dr. Cohen's had a pretty amazing career. She got her MD from Yale Medical School, her MPH from Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, and she trained in internal medicine at MGH. She was a founder of Doctors for Obama and then went to work at CMS in the Obama administration. She helped implement the ACA. And then in 2017, she left DC and the Obama administration for North Carolina, where she became Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. Was an innovator in the Medicare program there. And of course, in 2020, her job changed, and she became, in many ways, the public face of the effort to combat the COVID-19 pandemic in North Carolina. And then a couple weeks ago, another chapter opened for Dr. Cohen when it was announced that she was going to work for Aledade, a healthcare consultancy that is known for its work in ACOs primarily. And she's heading up a new unit, new part of Aledade called Aledade Care Solutions. And we hope to find out a little bit about what the heck that's about. So long, rapid introduction. So thanks for the time today.
Peter, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So let's just jump in. I think people probably are curious because Aledade is a high profile company about exactly what this Aledade Care Solutions is going to be about. In a blog post, you said it was going to be something about wraparound care solutions to provide enhanced support to primary care practices. Sounds nice, but maybe you could sort of flesh that out and give some color to it. What does that mean?
Sure. Well, I think, Peter, it's probably helpful for me to step back and put into context why I chose, after 15 years of public service, to why I chose Aledade, and then what I see over the horizon with ACS. And so, I've had, thank you for the very kind introduction. I've had a wonderful number of years in public service where I feel like I've really had the opportunity to make change, impact at scale, build some healthier communities, learned a lot. And when I was looking for my next chapter, I was looking for something that was aligned with the values that I carried as a public servant, but also allowed for that impact at scale. And that's what I saw both of those things in Aledade. Aledade, number one, is an organization that creates alignment. And what I mean by that is they create a situation where all the players, from patient to practice and doctor to the payers to, frankly, the taxpayers, are all rowing in the same direction, which is pretty unusual, frankly, sometimes in healthcare. And they do that in these value arrangements, right? Create that financial incentive to do the right thing for the patient, which sounds easy and you're wondering why we don't do it more often, but they create that alignment that by what's right for the patient and keeping patients as healthy and building healthier patients and communities, that it's good for practices financially and frankly for their time. It's good for payers because they make a more efficient system, right? We're using the money wisely. And then for the taxpayers who pay for a lot of this, right? So they, one, they bring that alignment. I love that. I think that's important. But then second, they do it at scale. They work with more than 1,000 practices across the country, and more every day are becoming part of the network of practices that Aledade supports. And they bring tools to help those practices at scale. They don't buy practices, they partner with practices. And I liked that in addition, because that's our reality, is most primary care is practiced in small and medium practices, and they need new tools because, right, medicine is changing, the world is changing, they need tools around data, tools around communication, help with workflow changes. And that's what Aledade does. It doesn't say we need to buy you. It says, like, let us partner with you. And we Aledade would only do well when you do well, practices, and when the patients do well. And I love that alignment. And I love that scale. But what I joined for, to get back to your question, I didn't forget it, was what's over the horizon, right? They already had that core foundation. So what I hope to bring is some additional expansion of that core model to help practices care for patients and make them healthier, and at the same time reinforcing that financial incentive. So what are the things we can do to help practices expand their capacity to keep patients healthy and save money? I think the practices are doing a lot of good things, right? They're doing getting people in on the same day. They're following up after they get discharged from the hospital or get out of the emergency room. They're making sure folks get all their preventive care. Those are great things. But there's some things we can do beyond that. And particularly, it's using data to target patients who may need specialized care things. Maybe it's heart failure patients or kidney care patients, or folks who need more mental health support, or those who need advanced care planning. There are specialized care needs that primary care can deliver, but sometimes they need help and support to do it. Maybe it's a social worker to help with care navigation, resource navigation. So those are the kinds of things that I see in the future for Aledade Care Solutions to provide or to partner with practices to help them. Right, so it's good for patients, right, because they're getting targeted care services that keep them healthy. It's good for practices because the more they save, the more they financially get rewarded ultimately, and same for Aledade, right? So it's sort of self-reinforcing. So I really like that alignment. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. I think that's one piece of what I'll work on, but the other piece that Aledade I'll work on is just expanding what Aledade is able to do across different payers. And I'm particularly interested in expanding the work Aledade does in the Medicaid program. Obviously, that's where I've spent my last 5 years of attention. I'm excited to bring more value-based care to the Medicaid population because I think they deserve it. They deserve that high quality care coordination that we're seeing now in Medicare and some in the commercial sector. I definitely want to see that in Medicaid as well.
So care solutions, I mean, the way you've described it, it sounds, you know, some of it sounds very sort of frankly contained within healthcare services, but are you also looking forward to sort of what comes under the heading of social determinants of health? Is your unit of Aledade going to be the unit that sort of figures out how to implement interventions that would fall under that framework?
I think it's both. Yes, I think it's clinical, traditional, more clinical services, as well as thinking about the non-medical drivers of health. Because ultimately, we want the goal is the same. We want to keep patients healthy. And sometimes there are medical drivers that make them healthy or unhealthy, and there are non-medical drivers. And I think from the ACS perspective, we'll think about both of those things. But at the core of it is to integrate that care, whether it's traditional clinical care or not, integrate it into primary care in a seamless way, largely in a virtual way, right? To be able to expand that capacity, particularly into rural areas, into underserved communities, right? So we really want to think about when targeting, using data to target those particular services to the right person and patient or family at the right time, navigate them to the right resources at the right time, but really to develop that care model that can integrate into primary care so that primary care continues to be the quarterback, the foundation, the place where the entry point, and from there, use that as a way to help, whether it's navigating to specialty services or to navigate to the, those social services, right? Food or housing or transportation. I think it'll be both.
So this does sound very familiar if you've read or talked about value-based care. So I guess I'm wondering, you know, is there a why now behind why this care solutions unit is being created? Has something changed with respect to ACOs or value-based care models that is creating a need or an opportunity that didn't exist before? Or is this just sort of, you know, continuing on the journey of effort?
Well, I think it's somewhere in between. What I would say is we've been talking, let's just say in the social determinant space, I think there's been a lot of talk about social determinants, but I actually think that we haven't yet perfected care models and that integration of screening, care navigation, and follow-up really into to primary care, certainly. And I think that is some of the work that is still ahead. I mean, frankly, that is the work that I had been doing over the last 5 years in North Carolina, is to actually understand and build the evidence, what patients need, what services at what time, and what, you know, what are those pathways that make sense? Because we know that we can't do all things for all patients every single time. That's not possible. We really need to use data to be targeted, whether that's on the non-medical drivers or the medical drivers of health. We really need to use data to be targeted to the right patients that can most benefit from a particular kind of care intervention. And I think that I think the industry as a whole is still at the very early stages of doing that well, both the integration, right, making it seamless for a patient, and knowing how to best target which patients benefit from which services. So somewhat, I think it's an extension because it seems so natural and obvious, right? Keep people healthy. Let's not spend as much money in the emergency room. Let's keep them healthy before they get there. It seems super obvious, but yet we don't have the care pathways and the infrastructure and the data to actually make that possible in reality. And that's not the care that most people are getting. And so I'm excited to build this, build it in a way that feels seamless for patients, and work with practices to do it. And that's why I'm excited about Allity, right? Because they partner, again, they partner with practices, because that's reality, is where care gets delivered. And so we get to partner with practices as opposed to, you know, purchasing a practice and sort of overhauling it in a very different way. I like this idea of that impact at scale through partnership.
So is there a particular, just speaking to the medical driver and the clinical piece, I mean, this is a big problem. Do you have some ideas about what patient population you might work on first, either organized by demographic or the condition they have? I mean, I just wondered if there's a cliche warning. I'm just wondering if there's a low hanging fruit that you're thinking about.
I think there are some parts that are low hanging fruit where we know already that this is something that's going to keep people healthy, and we should offer it to every practice. And I think Aledade's already taken that first step in their first acquisition of Iris Healthcare, which is a company they had already had a relationship with and did a randomized control trial, right? If you want to talk about evidence, they did a randomized control trial about offering advanced care planning embedded within primary care. And so we've already seen it work. They did a subset of like 50 practices, I want to say, and they saw that when they offered the advanced care planning through this company, Iris, that patients were happy, practices were happy, and guess what? We're honoring patients' preferences and wishes, and that often results in more efficient use of resources. And so, great, that's a win-win across the board. Aledade learned that from the evidence and said, time to scale. Let's purchase that company. Let's offer it to everyone, right? So that is already like the first up of like, okay, we've learned enough to offer this to everyone. Now I think there are others that we need to build the evidence for. I think kidney care is an interesting one. We know that there are folks who we can watch slowly. Their kidneys are not doing well and doing well over a period of time. Are there things that we can do to help them stay off of dialysis longer? Or if they need to transition to dialysis, transition in a way that doesn't result in an emergency room visit and a hospital stay, but does it in an outpatient setting, which is what I would want for my parents, right? If that was happening to them. So I think there are still things that we know we can scale, and we are. And I think there are things we'll want to build the evidence for. And I want to do that with primary care practices. And the beautiful thing about Aledade is this, you know, over 1,000 practices that we can say, well, what do you think you need to do better? How can we partner with you to help expand your capacity? And I think different practices will have different challenges. I think larger practices can do more of those things. Smaller practices may not be able to hire the social worker to do the care navigation or the extra nurse to do the care coordination for a patient going into dialysis, right? So there's different practices will need different things. I think practices in rural areas, you know, they have trouble, everyone's having trouble hiring, but double that for rural areas. So I think there's a lot of things we can do with virtual care to actually expand access and capacity for those practices. But again, we're still figuring out what does that exactly look like? What will that mean? Certain things we know and we can scale, others we'll learn over time.
Now, I believe that, you know, part of your brief is, and you mentioned it, is this work in the Medicaid, with Medicaid payers and with people covered by Medicaid. So what is the, will you be working with companies that have managed care contracts with Medicaid agencies, or is it ACOs that have Medicaid population? What entity would you be working with? And is it sort of taking some of what you've been talking about and applying it to the Medicaid population, or do you see sort of a need for different strategy or tactics with that, with Medicaid, both because of the way the payment is organized and also perhaps because of the characteristics of the population?
Sure. Let me take the first half of your question is who are you working with? And yeah. Aledade works generally with two parties, right? They work with practices and support them, but they also work with payers and their contracts. So in Medicaid, it'd be similar. It's who owns the Medicaid payment. Oftentimes that's managed care companies. So Aledade would work with those managed care companies and then work with practices. Aledade already works, for example, with a number of community health centers. Certainly they see a lot of Medicaid patients. I'd love to see Aledade work with more and more community health centers. Frankly, they're already delivering care to these populations. They're doing it in a coordinated and integrated way. I'd love to see them financially benefit from the fact that they're doing that care, but I think they can even, and then have Aledade help them go even further with what you're doing for patients. But I think it's not just community health centers. They're practices of all shapes and sizes that care for Medicaid patients. I think that there are practices that Aledade works with right now where they're only working on their Medicare patients, but that practice also sees Medicaid. But we haven't kind of made the connection yet between the payer, Medicaid payer, and that practice. So I think there's a lot of ways in which this can grow, both the number of practices and the types of practices, as well as just expanding the payer contracts that a particular practice sees that is in a value arrangement. And as far as the tactics, I think there are a lot that will be similar, like care access, right? Same day scheduling. That's the same for a Medicare patient as a Medicaid patient. So why isn't the entire practice moving to same day scheduling? Why are you just doing it for your Medicare patients? You should be doing it for everyone. But we want to bring you contracts, you the practice, across commercial, across Medicaid, across Medicare, that makes same day access meaningful financially for you. And so I think there'll be some similar tactics following up after emergency room visits, after hospitalization. But the Medicaid population is different. And within the Medicaid population, it's very heterogeneous. Sometimes it's a lot of kids. And so that's a new space for Aledade to think about, is like, well, how do you support practices that are caring for kids? A lot of moms. How do you think about maternity care, right? That is a new space for Aledade. So I think there are new models of care and ways to intervene that we'll be working on with the clinical teams. But then there's a lot, certainly, we can draw from the work that Aledade has done in the past.
And as you know, there's a new animal in the value-based care menagerie called direct contract entities. And will you be, do you envision working with, in healthcare, you have to use an acronym, with the DCEs?
Well, I think every option continues to be on the table, right? I think what Aledade has focused on is bringing value contracts to practices and supporting them to be successful in those arrangements. And so right now the focus has been in the Medicare Shared Savings Program and other ACO type models, and that has worked well. But I wouldn't say that in the future is that, but I think, you know, direct contracting is very early. We'll see how the program evolves and continue to look at it. But, you know, right now our focus is on making sure practices can be successful in the programs that are scalable, which is the Medicare Shared Savings Program, which are getting commercial contracts, Medicaid contracts. So that is certainly our focus, but I wouldn't put those other things on the we will never. But I think it's a let's see how things evolve and look at the data and see what makes sense for practices and for patients.
There've been many evaluation reports about the various model programs done by CMS, and also some, you know, of course, there's been evaluation of the Medicare Shared Savings Program, ACOs. And, you know, people go back and forth about how much money is saved and, you know, the net versus the gross savings and, are the quality metrics really measuring quality? But I think it's fair to say that it doesn't seem like the value-based care models we have now they've emerged as clearly winning propositions. It's been a little bit underwhelming. I guess that's a commentary, a question. Two questions. Do you agree with my characterization that the results have been a little underwhelming, or maybe we can say mixed bag? And if that's the case, what needs to change?
Well, so one, I would say when you parse out the data, and I know, Peter, you've looked at this too, when you look at physician-led ACOs, the data is not underwhelming there. It's pretty clear that that works. And it, frankly, when I was evaluating my next steps of things, I look at the data as well. I see things where that alignment with physician-led entities supporting practices, like the data is not mixed there. It's very clear. It works. Now, I think when you start to look at ACOs that are dominated by healthcare systems, I think you are right in that saying that the data is more mixed. And that's because I don't think the alignment is there. But I do think if you get the alignment, I think those are possible. And I do think there are policy solutions to continue to get more and more alignment, even on the health system side, but those are hard. And I was talking earlier with others, look, change is hard, whether it's change in the COVID context, change in the value context. Wow, we're asking people to change the way they operate. That is really, really hard. And what you see in the data as well is as the folks get better at value over time, meaning they're not so good at it in the first year, but give them a little bit of time. And so having that realization that physician-led ACO works, but it does take time to get there. You actually need to change what you do. You can't just sit there and expect it to happen automatically. Allidade partners intentionally with tools and a lot of resources and a lot of support to help practices change, because that change management is really, really hard. And I think oftentimes we can say, well, the policy, you know, intellectually or academically works. Why isn't it in reality? Because change management is hard. And you got to respect that. But I do think the incentives matter. I also think that, you know, the bar by which we are judging always seems to change. I don't see a lot of other things right now that continue to allow patients to have choice, patients to be at the center of things and save money. I mean, that's the mix, right? You could always just say you can't get a thing and that would save money, but that's not the ethos of and the core values of what are in the Medicare program, meaning like if you're in Medicare, traditional Medicare, you can go to any provider in that network. And as long as that is going to be a core tenant, I think these programs have performed incredibly well, right? Considering all of the challenges.
You're staking that, it sounds like the prime ingredient that you're identifying and where you're parsing it is, you know, physician led being sort of a crucial aspect to, you know, success in value-based care.
I think that's what the data has shown us so far. I don't think that it's impossible. And I think others have been successful. So I don't want to say with a broad brush, but I do think it's more mixed. But go where the data is pointing you, at least for these models. It may mean we need either tweaks to the existing models or other visions of a model for bigger health systems in order to see similar kinds of savings and the alignment, right? So I think there's more work to be done for sure. But I think in this instance, I think the data is pretty clear about physician-led models are doing quite well.
I think one critique of the direct contracting program is that those entities would not necessarily be physician-led.
Well, and I think that's why you're seeing, you know, I think there's more to learn here, right? I think we're at the beginning of really all of these value models, because given the enormity of the change we're expecting from the industry, but direct contracting is even earlier than all of those. So I think there's just a lot to learn. It could be a positive way to go. And like I said, that might be something that we want to look at down the line, but not at the moment. I think more to learn.
Do you have an opinion at this point about what the Trump administration did with Pathways to Success in the Medicare Share Savings Program, which some of the ACOs have pushed back hard on, and you know, there's concern about the program stagnating and the need to make some changes. I think Pathways to Success is, you know, there are many features of it, but the one that's maybe the easiest to talk about is putting downside risk on ACOs sooner. So do you have an opinion on that? And do you think that program needs to be adjusted or maybe scratched altogether?
Well, I think some of that was started while I was still at CMS during the Obama administration, where we were creating models with downside risk, but more upside as well. And for folks who are committed and are doing this, frankly, it looks like more upside for them. And so frankly, for a lot of, when I just speak from the Allidade perspective, folks are getting savings. We're not that concerned about downside. And if we can capture more of upside, that's a win. Now, I do think that the word pathways is an important part of it, because I do think there is a path here, because I think as someone needs to see that it's possible, because you can show them data from this practice or that practice, but it's not their practice. And they worry, well, I don't know if I can get those same results, so I'm just going to sit back and stay in fee for service because I know it, I don't love it, but I know it. And so to get folks to change, I do think you are going to need pathways to make it feel less risky at first, so that they can get experience and say, okay, I can do this with my patients, with my practice, with my changes, and then step from there. And I think all the Allidade practices have shown year over year that they get better at it as they get into the program and more mature as they go. So I don't think there's any concern about adding those elements as practices get more experience.
Was there any element of the pathways to success as it was rolled out by the prior administration that you think should be just sort of changed? You know, you've spoken, you know, in general about sort of, in some sense, turning up the heat on downside risk with higher rewards, higher upside risk. But is there any element of the program that you see needs changing right off the bat? Have you had a chance to think about that?
I don't know if I'm at the level of detail yet. So come back to me. And I'm sure as I talk to practices and understand what they're going through, you know, they are trying to keep their practices open in a very rapidly changing world. And right. And then you get curveballs thrown at you. COVID, huge, right? And like all of those changes. And I think folks just want to understand that they can keep their practices open, that they can deliver good care. And I think those are the kinds of things that we just want to make sure are possible. But like I said, I think the physician-led ACOs, particularly the ones helped by Allidade, have seen success. I don't think that anyone is concerned about moving to downside risk as they mature. But I do think there is some activation energy, if you will, right? It is hard at the beginning. And so I do think you need to keep barriers low to get people on the path. And then think about, you know, okay, now you've got experience. What are the ways in which we can make sure that you continue to move and mature on that path as you go along?
Has COVID-19 and the pandemic been good for value-based care?
Well, I think it's certainly shown yet again that fee-for-service is broken, right? Because if you're just getting paid on doing more and all of a sudden you can't do more, like that's going to be a huge financial hit. And we heard from practices in North Carolina, they couldn't keep their doors open. They couldn't keep their nurses employed. You know, they got help, whether it was from PPP or frankly from our Medicaid program. We did have, you know, some hazard payments or hardship payments for practices to keep them open. So did Blue Cross Blue Shield and others. And now I think, and then many others did a huge amount of work to overnight do telehealth work, which was overdue. And I'm glad we made that switch, and I hope it stays. But it showed that fee for service is broken. I think that it depends what kind of value arrangement. I think we talk way too much. There's so much put in that value bucket. Not all value is created equal in those financial arrangements. But I do think that there are ones that are more beneficial in a major crisis like COVID, because if you're getting monthly payments. But I'd even say in something like a Medicare Shared Savings Program, that check doesn't come until far down the line after mm-hmm. you've done the investment and the work. And that's hard. That's hard for practices as well. To be like, oh, in 18 months, I might get something after I do all this hard work, or maybe I'll get nothing. That's hard for folks. And I still think it is a risk when something like COVID happens. I think, you know, the data I've seen from Allidade around COVID has been really impressive, meaning that practices were able to continue to save money, continue to serve their patients, all that. But that, I don't know if that is the norm out there in primary care.
We're about out of time. One thing I wanted to ask you about. When you try to describe to somebody what an ACO is who's not in this world, you know, the eyes glaze over real fast. This is real inside baseball stuff. Shared savings, you know, all of it, the financial benchmarks. Do you think that there needs to be a way, and do you have any ideas about how you might do it, to create more public support and awareness of value-based care? Because right now, it strikes me, it sort of it's almost like the operating system on your computer. You know, it's there. It's but the in fact, the whole ACO framework is, you know, attribution. The patient doesn't even know that they're in an ACO. Mm-hmm. So is that a failing of the way things have been done so far? And do you, well, again, two-part question. Do you agree with my predicate? And if you do, have you thought about whether public support or understanding is needed here? Because it's not there, obviously.
Yeah. Well, so first I would say health communication about health is hard. I would say as someone who was the face of and the communicator during COVID, I recognize it. So it's not just value. Lots of things are hard to communicate about in this space. But we absolutely, you know, the way I think you do better at this is making it real for folks when it matters to them. I don't need them to care about risk adjustment and even attribution, but what I want them to know, and this is how I explain it to, you know, to my family who, you know, are not steeped in value-based payments, is you're going to get a call after you go to the emergency room from your primary care practice to be like, I noticed you were in the emergency room. What, you know, how can we help you? Where before they might not have known, number one, there wouldn't have been the data for them to even know you went to the emergency room. And two, there was no structure or financial incentive to even think about making that phone call afterwards. Or it's the when you call your practice and say, I need to be seen today, where often someone would be like, sorry, we can't get you in today. So your, you know, your options were, you know, some sort of like minute clinic that didn't know you or emergency room. Not great options, right? But now when you're like, yep, I can get you in same day, how's 2 o'clock? You're like, oh, that's terrific, right? That's value-based care.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.